Okay, good morning, Gutvach. Welcome back to the bi-weekly shiur here at Shaar HaTzedek. Our month of learning, the Kol, is sponsored by Eitan Yosef Leh and Ora Melamed in honor of Sophie Melamed. Our week of learning is sponsored by Mark Goldberg and Linda Bachman in honor of the first Yahrzeit of their mother, Yvette Gardner. And today's learning in the Kol and outside the Kol is sponsored by Dubin and Marcella Hannon in honor of Ezra Hannon's birthday. So we wish them happy birthday. And I understand today's shiur is sponsored anonymously, so we thank Anonymous for their sponsorship. I don't know if it's a consistent Anonymous each time, but we thank whoever it is. Okay, I wanted to continue in the Sefer Har Tzvi, as we've been doing until now. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, if you look on the source sheet, we only have one tshuva, one response on the page today. And it's an interesting one, although the actual case may not feel so practical to all of us. It'll teach us some general principles and some more specific ideas related to both the idea of Basar B'Chalav as well as the idea of Bishul on Shabbos, which we've had the opportunity to talk about in the past a few weeks ago as well. So if you look in the beginning, he has this interesting case. B'dikas ta'arovez Basar B'Chalav alidei Bishul. Someone is trying to inspect the existence of Basar B'Chalav. You've had this question. I don't know why it comes up so much. I don't know where this happens. Maybe someone here will enlighten me. But you've had this case discussed by at least three or four, I should say, four that I know of, Poskim, who asked the following question. Somebody works, Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank refers to it as a ma'abada chimis. I'm not sure if that's a typo, and it's really supposed to be with a chaf, meaning a chemical laboratory. Ma'abada means, that word means laboratory. Chimis, I don't know what that word means, unless it's with a chaf, in which case it would be chemistry. So a chemical laboratory, so a chemist is working on a project. And what's the project? Shemavien shum, they bring to him mine chocolat, types of chocolate, Lasos bedika im yesh b'im tarov es shel basar b'chalav. So unless he's working for some kashrus agency, which is possible, I just don't know from the context. So they bring him chocolate bars, and they want to make sure there's no basar b'chalav mixed into the chocolate bars and the ingredients. So what do you have to do to figure that out? You have to cook the chocolate bar, melt it down, in order to then inspect the different parts and the ingredients in the bar. So is that a case of the iser of bishul basar b'chalav? Meaning, I'm now cooking this chocolate bar. If it has basar, meat, v'chalav, and milk inside of it, what I'm essentially doing is I am cooking milk and meat. Are you allowed to cook meat and milk? So it's interesting. That's the only thing we do know from the Pesukim. We are all familiar with the Isser to eat milk and meat. The Isser to eat basar v'chalav, because it's not in the Pasuk, but it is in Uncle Maishi's song. Right? We will never, ever, ever eat meat and milk together. That's how we know that you're not allowed to eat meat and milk, basar v'chalav. That's obvious to us. But after Uncle Maishi wrote the song, the Torah decided that's a good idea. And the Torah put it in, but in different words. The Torah said, Lo sivashel gdi b'chalev imo. How many times does the Torah tell us that? The Torah tells us that three, a lot is the right answer. Three times. We had it twice recently, Mishpatim and Kisisa, this past week's Parsha. And we also have it later in Parshas Re'eh. In all three cases, the Torah says, Lo sivashel gdi b'chalev imo. Lo sivashel means don't cook. We'll see soon. Very, very fascinatingly, Blue Nether, how Unklish translates Sivashel, but we translate Sivashel, obviously, as do not cook. Don't cook Basar B'chalav. Okay, the Pasuk says B'chalav Imo in the milk of its mother, which doesn't exactly mean that either, but the point is, you can't cook meat and milk together. Okay, so why does it say it three times? The Gemara in Chulin and Daf Kuf Tezvav tells us that the truth is, the Torah repeats it three times, because they're assuming three different cases. Each one is teaching us an independent isser, an independent din. First of all, you cannot cook basar b'chalav. That's what the pasuk says. Second of all, you cannot eat basar b'chalav. Third of all, you cannot even exactly get hana, gain benefit from basar b'chalav. So there are three isurim that are being taught to us by this pasuk. That's why the pasuk is repeated three times. Even though it sounds like it's saying the same thing all three times, it's not really. It's adding a new isser each time. One side note that's interesting to point out. You know, there was a whole movement in the Rishonim, really already from the Gaonim, which is what the Rishonim were working based off of. The Rambam especially was responding to the Gaonim. But there was a movement among the Gaonim and the Rishonim to write Sifrei HaMitzvos. Sifrei HaMitzvos basically were the counting of the mitzvos. So we know from a Gemara in Makkos, we know that there are supposed to be 613 mitzvos, Torah, Tziva, Lana, Moshe, that there's supposed to be 613 mitzvos. The Ramban points out in his introductory essay opening up against the Rambam Sefer Mitzvos, he points out that it's not so clear that we pass Naitha Gemara. There's one Gemara that says 613, there are other Chazals that say more or less, different, the count is not necessarily 613. But the Ramban assumes we have on good, on tradition, that there are 613 mitzvos. Okay, so we assume there are 613 mitzvos. What are the 613 mitzvos? So the Gaonim started to count these mitzvos, those mitzvos. The Rambam wrote his famous Sefer HaMitzvos, mostly, I mean, he also wanted to delineate for us what the mitzvahs were, but he says in the beginning that he's there to combat what the Bahag and other Gaonim, but especially the Bahag, had written in their Sefer HaMitzvos. He disagreed very fundamentally on a lot of things, which is why the introduction to his work, Sefer HaMitzvos, where he counts all the mitzvahs, is shrushim, is 14 shrushim, roots, or concepts which are supposed to guide how a person counts the mitzvahs. So before he tells you what the mitzvahs are, he tells you, here's how I came to my conclusions. And really, in most of the cases of those shrushim, he's telling you why he disagrees with everyone before him, especially the Bahag. So that's the Sefer Mitzvahs. How many mitzvahs, if you were writing a Sefer Mitzvahs, how many mitzvahs would you put in for Basar B'chalav? Who's, I'm here.
Is that three?
You would put in three. Achila, Bishol, Hana. You disagree? Anyone do a different number? Any other option besides three?
One.
What's, why one? Basar B'chalav. So I hear both those, no? So first of all, you could say, I would assume it's more logical, like you, let's say, to start, that there are three mitzvos. Don't eat, don't cook, or say, don't cook, don't eat, and don't get benefit from. On the other hand, you could argue it's all one parsha, one mitzvah of Basar B'chalav, so much so that the Torah only said one term. Lo sivashal di b'chalav mo. Okay, but it has two subsets. It's don't cook, and also don't eat and don't gain a benefit. What does the Rambam do? Two. He counts two. He says there's an Isser of Bishol, and he says there's an Isser Achila. What happened to the Isser Hana? So Rambam tells you that he thinks the Isser Hana is included and subsumed under the overall theme, the overall mitzvah of Achila Basar B'chalav. A very fascinating thing. It's not for now. It would be a shiur in of itself. But it's an important point to figure out why the Rambam chose the road less taken. It's good that he did, because it gave us a lot of shirim to give for the rest of history. But one wonders why he didn't count three or one, and he chose two. Strange idea. Okay, a lot to say about that, but not for now. So we all know there's this Isser D'oraisa, this biblical prohibition of Bishol Basar B'chalav. So in our case, where you have this guy inspecting some piece of chocolate, you know, the other context I've heard is one is a laboratory experiment in a school setting, in a college setting. The person's taking chemistry. I don't know if they would do this in chemistry, but they're taking a lab in college. And I majored in Jewish studies, so I don't know. I never took a lab in college. But if you took a lab in college, so you have to do an experiment. So maybe the experiment sometimes included. This is what the case I know of that happened a long time ago. They might include in the experiment to tell you to cook some meat product, some milk product together, and you're trying to study some chemical reaction. So is that an Isser of Bishol Basar B'chalav? Another case that comes up, aside from chocolate, also apparently in butter they do the inspection to make sure there's no meat product mixed into the butter sample also. So in all those cases, that considered a Bishol Basar B'chalav. So let's start from the very, very, very beginning. The Shulchan Aruch in Yardayasim in Pei Zion in Sif Aleph tells us that the reason that the Torah refers to the Isser Achila as Bishol, meaning the Torah says, don't cook, lo sivashal di b'chalav imo. And that's supposed to refer also not only to cooking, but also to eating. So why does the Torah refer to the eating Isser as cooking? So Rosh Hashanah Aruch tells us, based on Chazal, that the Torah is trying to stress to us that the cooking has to take place derech bishul. It has to take place in the normal way. It has to be cooked in a standard, normal way. Meaning, if you cook something in a funny way, even though in halacha there's multiple ways of cooking things, you could cook something on a pot in a fire, you could fry something, you could bake something. There are many ways of cooking food. When it comes to Basar B'chalav, it has to be the standard normal way of cooking, the standard process of cooking. That's called Derech Bishol. Otherwise, it's not considered usher on a D'oraisa level to cook the Basar B'chalav in that way. What's an example of something that's an abnormal way of cooking? So the Shach, there in his commentary on Yoredei Pei Zion, gives us an answer. He says, Kavash. What's Kavash? Pickling. So when you leave food in a liquid for, it might depend on which type of liquid, let's just say for now, for 24 hours, me ace lace for 24 hours. So over the course of those 24 hours, the question when exactly it happens, whether it builds up over the 24 hours or whether it happens magically, suddenly at the last second. But either way, over 24 hours, if you leave something soaking in a liquid, it ultimately will cook. Now, that's true. Let's think of like vinegar. When you literally pickle something, you leave it in vinegar, correct? My mother-in-law likes to make pickles before Pesach. Do they not sell kosher Pesach pickles? I don't know why they do. Yes, I don't know why we do that. So she likes to pickle pickles before Yom Tov for Pesach. So she puts them in a glass jar. She puts that in a bowl because it leaks or something. And she leaves the cucumbers in vinegar. That becomes the brine. That's how you pickle something. Fine. But you can also leave something in other types of food for a long time. For example, the Gemara assumes, and this is correct on some level at least, if you would leave meat in milk for a significant amount of time, al pi halacha, that would cook over 24 hours. Okay, you have to figure out the details in terms of how this will work and when it'll work. But if you leave something in a liquid for 24 hours, that's considered kavush kemavushal. That's considered cooking when it comes to let's say hilchos Shabbos at least, for example. The other case is malicha. Not necessarily. For example, malicha, which means salting. So the Gemara assumes, I think this is correct chemically, the Gemara assumes that when you pour a lot of salt on something, it actually raises the level of heat internally. I don't know what that means in terms of felt heat. I don't know if we feel it. But it does gets molecules moving. So we assume there's transfers of taste and therefore a process of cooking, al pi halacha, when you salt something. So salting or soaking in brine, things like that can result in cooking. Pseudo-cooking processes. So are those considered cooking when it comes to basar b'chalav? So when it comes to Shabbos, that is considered cooking. We're not here to talk about that right now, but that's something that's important to think about. When it comes to hilchos basar b'chalav, is that also called cooking? So what the Shach is telling us here is not really, not on a deraisa level at least. On a deraisa level, a biblical level, cooking can only be derech bishul, the normal standard way of cooking. Yes, melicha or kavush, these cases of pickling or the like, soaking, are going to affect bishul in terms of halacha, in some scenarios, but when it comes to basar b'chalav, there's a special rule that it has to be lo sevashal di b'chalav imo. It has to be in a derech bishul, which is the normal way of creating a meal for eating, and therefore it would not be usher on a deraisa level. That being said, the Pesachei Tshuva, and this is where we get into exactly what the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank brings up. We're just getting the background for it, but now we're getting to the Makoros that he already quotes. If you want to look inside a little bit, the Pesachei Tshuva there in Sifkat Gimel tells us that even though it's true that when you soak something or when you salt something, it's not considered cooking on a deraisa level. The important part about that is that when you cook something on a deraisa level, it's also asar bahana, as we said before, correct? You're not even allowed to gain benefit from basar b'chalav that was cooked. If something was not asar deraisa, if it wasn't cooked on a deraisa level, meaning it was only rabbinically forbidden, for example, soaking or salting, right? If you cook basar b'chalav in that way, if the basar b'chalav is only asar midrabanan, then it's mutter bahana. So the Isser Hana, the Isser to benefit from Basar B'chalav, this is important, only exists when the Basar B'chalav is a Daraisa type of Basar B'chalav. You know what else is not a Basar B'chalav Daraisa, usually? A cheeseburger. A cheeseburger is usually not Basar B'chalav Daraisa. Why not?
It's that an after-cook.
I'm sorry?
The cheese is after.
That's an important point which will relate to what we're talking about. But even if you would cook them, I think I've been told in movies that sometimes they'll put the meat on the stove top and they'll put the cheese on top of it while it's cooking. So why isn't that basar b'chalav d'oraisa? So there's an assumption that basar b'chalav d'oraisa only exists when you have kasher meat and kasher cheese and you put them together and you make them asar. But if it was already asar cheese and asar meat, then it's not basar b'chalav d'oraisa. It's still basar b'chalav midrabanan. It's still asar. But it may be mutter and hana because of that. So that's important to keep track of when something's asar d'oraisa or asar midrabanan. So let's say you have one of these funny cases. You soaked the meat, you salted the meat, you did something in a derabanan way of cooking the meat. So now it's mutter b'hana. It's not forbidden in benefit. So the Pesachei Tshuva says, yeah, but still, you shouldn't leave it around the house. You shouldn't leave it around the house. You shouldn't leave it around the house. Why not? So the Shari Dura, quotes from the Shari Dura in earlier Sefer, says that you shouldn't leave it around the house because now, if you cook that very same mixture in a normal way, you will be over on Bishol Basar B'chalav Midaraisa, meaning you have, I don't know, meat that's soaked in, let's just put vinegar and milk together. So meat and milk soaked together for 24 hours, that's considered cooking on a derabanan level, not a deraisa level. It's true that it's asar bahana, but the Shari Dura says, don't leave it around the house. Make sure you dispose of it. Why? Because what's going to happen next is that you might take those same ingredients and put it on the stove, put it in the oven, cook it, and what's that going to be? That's going to be basar b'chalav, a bishul, a basar b'chalav, deraisa. That's going to be considered cooking on a deraisa level. So, yeah, everyone following so far? Why would it ever happen? An accident in the kitchen. An accident in the kitchen, I don't know. Or sometimes, you know, you have a gayish help in the home and they left some dish around. So don't leave it sitting there, even though it's not basar b'chalav d'oraisa. You could wait for her to take it up, throw it out, you should get rid of it. You might come to cook it. So what's the diak over here? So b'kiva eger.
Regardless if you eat it, right? It's cooking itself.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're saying
although we'll get back to whether it has to be edible. That's going to be the important part. But yes, regardless of whether you actually eat it.
As far as hana, I'm forgetting about whether a human eats it. What about like a dog food?
Right. So yeah, that's
but
a separate. Correct.
Get if you were preparing
excellent
it
question.
To sell to a guy, and you're not.
Right. So selling would be like the regular hana. Right. Selling would be like the regular hana. Everything else is a bigger discussion. Absolutely a good question. So Rabbi Akiva Eger makes an important point over here. He notes that the Shari Dura told us that if you cook meat and milk in this derech, this funny, abnormal way of kavush or of malicha, so then if you go ahead and cook it afterwards, that's bishul basar b'chalav. But what if you actually had basar b'chalav, meat and milk, that was cooked in a stove together or cooked in an oven together, and now you want to cook it again, now you want to reheat it again, would that be bishul basar b'chalav? What would you guess? Ein bishul achar bishul. Ein bishul achar bishul. So Rabbi Kiva Eger says exactly that. He says, look what you see over here. The Shari Dura says, if it was cooked in an abnormal way, so it was only derabanan, and then you cook it on a biblical level, that's going to be bishul basar b'chalav. But what if it was already cooked on a biblical level? What if you mamish literally cooked the meat and the milk together already, and now you want to reheat it, now you want to recook it? Says Rabbi Kiva Eger, that'll just be ein bishul achar bishul, which we know a concept from Hilchos Shabbos. This I do believe we spoke about 2 weeks ago, or whatever, a month ago. Basically, the concept is like this. We'll get a little bit more into it later, B'li Nadar Mirtz Hashem. But the Torah assumes that it's asr d'oraisa to cook on Shabbos. You're not allowed to cook. But if you had a food that was cooked from before Shabbos, you are on a d'oraisa level. You are allowed to reheat that food. Midar Abanan, there are many takanos and gezeros which limit the ability to heat up food. The flame has to be covered. The food had to have been cooked. All of those things that you heard of before, that's all midar Abanan. Midar Raisa, on a biblical level, cooking on Shabbos is forbidden, but reheating on Shabbos is permissible. So Rabbi Kiva Eger here is simply taking a concept from Hilchos Shabbos and transposing it onto Hilchos Basar B'chalav. And he's saying that the same way that it's mutter, ein bishul achar bishul, meaning ein bishul achar bishul, sounds like we're talking about something asr, but it means there is no such thing as bishul achar bishul, meaning once it's cooked, it's cooked. You're not adding anything. You're just reheating it. That's not going to be a prohibition on Shabbos. So too, by Basar B'chalav, it's not going to be a problem. And he makes that diuk from what the Shari Dura has said that the Pesach Teshuva quoted for us. In his commentary here, the Gilyan Maharsha notes that we get the opposite impression later on. A lot of the Echorim point this out. If you look at the Ramah in Yeridaya, the famous Ramah, Pei Zayin Sif Vav, just a few Sifim later, the Ramah says a very fascinating thing. He says, he quotes Yesh Omrim, he quotes those who say, that if you're at a person's house, you're staying with a guy, or you're staying by a guy's house, and the guy, she has a pot on the stove, and maybe you have a pot on the stove next to it, whatever, so you want to stoke the coals on the stove just to keep the flames going. So you shouldn't stoke the flames on the stove if the guy's pot is on there at the same time. Why not? And the Ramah assumes that even if she's not currently cooking basar b'chalav, but rather she did already cook meat and milk mixtures in that pot, and there's just blios, there's just the absorbed matter inside of the pot, and you're stoking the coals, you're raising the flame, what are you doing? You're cooking those blios, you're cooking those absorbed tastes of basar b'chalav. So what does that sound like? Oh, it sounds exactly bishul achar bishul, right? She already cooked in this pot. She already made her cheese and her Philly cheesesteak. Does Philly cheesesteak even have cheese in it? I don't even know. But she already made her Philly cheesesteak in the pot. Do you make it in a pot? Okay, the whole thing has, the kash is on everything here. But either way, she already made the cheese and the meat mixture inside of her pot. It's already been cooked. So you're going to stoke the coals and you're going to raise the flame and you're going to cook the pot a little bit more. So what? Ein bishul achar bishul. So the Gilyan Maharsha and other Achronim point out, the Prima Kadim as well, say that here we have a case of yesh bishul achar bishul. Now the Ramah admits that it's just a chumrah. He says some people say it and it's just a chumrah, it's just a stringency. The Shach says that the velt is makel on this chumrah. But either way, you see, at least in chumrah, you see the Ramah has, and the Ramah really recommends, being machmir for such a concept, which sounds like yesh bishul achar bishul. Yesh bishul achar bishul. So now you have a machlokas in the poskim, machlokas in the achronim, whether there is bishul achar bishul when it comes to basar b'chalav. Everyone agrees when it comes to shabbos. Well, it's not exactly true what I'm saying right now, because it will depend on solid foods and liquid foods, but let's just make a general rule about solid foods. Everyone agrees that there's a concept of ein bishul achar bishul on Shabbos. We'll say it that way. There is an idea of ein bishul achar bishul on Shabbos, which means, technically speaking, me'ikar din, the de'oraisa level allows for reheating food on Shabbos. That everyone agrees to. The question is, does that halacha get taken and transposed into Hilchos bishul basar b'chalav? Is that also considered bishul in the sense that if it's already been cooked, reheating is not an issue? Or no, even reheating basar b'chalav is the same issue of bishul, even though you've already cooked it? That's the machlokas between the postim over here, right? That's what we're following so far. That's the machlokas in the achronim that we've quoted so far. So we need to get a little bit of understanding of what that means. But if you look in the first paragraph, meaning the second paragraph in the sheet, but the first paragraph in the answer of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank here, he says, look, Ora, his question will depend on exactly what we just said. The chocolate was already cooked. What this chemist has to do now is break down the chocolate, cook it again in order to inspect the ingredients, in order to understand what it's made up of. So he's re-cooking something that's already cooked. right? That chocolate bar is already cooked. So zetolib machlokes achronim baser b'chalav shenis bashel biyachad. That's the question that the achronim ask about in mutter lachzer lavash macharkach. That's exactly what we just gave the background for, right? He says, my question that I've been asked: are you allowed to chemically inspect a chocolate bar to see the baser b'chalav content inside of it through cooking? Is that considered bishul? So he says that should depend. That should hinge on our machlokes we just mentioned. Is there such a thing as bishul achar bishul by baser b'chalav? If there is such a thing as bishul achar bishul by baser b'chalav, that means you're over on bishul even if it's already been cooked before. So then the same thing should be true here. It's bishul achar bishul. You're reheating something that was already cooked, but that's still considered cooking baser b'chalav. But if you assume ein bishul achar bishul, just like Shabbos, then it shouldn't be a problem here in the case of the chocolate inspection in the chemist's lab. In this case as well, just like Shabbos. So, in order to get to the bottom of what this machlokas is about, so we need to understand Hilchos Shabbos a little bit better. The Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos on Kuf Mem Hayam and Beis tells us, like we said before, that food that was cooked from before Shabbos is allowed to be reheated. Gemara, the Mishnah there is talking about chicken that was cooked from before Shabbos. You want to drop it back into a pot of hot water on Shabbos. Kli Sheni, Kli Rishon, everything is coming from that Mishnah. But basically, reheating is permissible. But and that's what we mentioned before. But they Rishonim have a very important machlokes in the following case. This is interesting. You got to pay attention though. Meaning until now I was fine without attention, but now you really got to get into it. So let's say you have the following case. Let's say you cooked a piece of chicken, 2/3, a half cooked. That's what we refer to in halacha as Michael Ben Drusai. So Michael Ben Drusai is because there was a person named Ben Drusai who was a bandit. He was a running robber. He was always running around town, so he never had time to eat a full meal. So whenever he would have a chance to cook quickly, to cook his chicken, to cook his meat quickly, he would only cook it either a half or a third cooked, and then he would consume it that way. So it's basically the minimally edible type of chicken or meat, even though there's still a ways to go in terms of making it more gishmak, making it more cooked. Fine. So let's say you cooked a piece of chicken to Michael Ben Josai, to a third, to a half cooked, whatever. Now it's edible and halachically cooked before Shabbos. Good so far? Fine. Now on Shabbos, you do want to make it more edible. It's still a little chewy, so you want to cook it a little bit more and make it fully cooked. Is that an iser of bishul on Shabbos? Again, before Shabbos, you halachically cooked it. It's kemaychel ben drusai. It's half cooked, which is halachically cooked. Now on Shabbos, you want to add more. Cholent is different because you leave it on the blech consistently. Yeah, you want to put this onto a stove on Shabbos. Yeah, you don't have to throw out your cholent this week again. I know you're always fighting with your daughter, but not this time, you don't have to. So are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to put a piece of chicken like that back on the stove in the oven, something like that on Shabbos? I mean, it definitely feels aser, right? But you hear the question? Meaning it's not fully cooked, but on the other hand, it is fully cooked halachically. So what am I really... It's edible. It qualifies.
Clarification. Bishul achar bishul. Cooking is usually in a liquid. So if you put a piece of meat and you just put it roasting in the oven...
Still. Yeah, we'll assume for now still. We'll assume now for still.
So then that's not...
We're not going to distinguish between even roasting or frying, anything like that. We're just going to assume cooking right now. So let's talk about a pot with water just to be safe, because there are differences. You're right.
No,
cooking. I mean, you're not turning on the fire, you know, everything, yeah, all that set up, correct. No, just the chicken part. So, basically, I heard both arguments, meaning on the one hand, it doesn't feel good, you're cooking on Shabbos. On the other hand, like you said, it is cooked already, it's edible already. So are you really doing anything? So this is a machlokas rishonim. This is amazing, and this sheds incredible light.
Specifically the machlokas, taking it from the medium rare to medium. I mean, because you can say the same thing from medium to well.
Excellent point. And that is a complicated discussion. We're only talking about the first case.
Okay.
But that's an excellent point that matters in halacha. Even if you have it at, even if you had it at medium or medium well, and then you take it to well, is that also doing something on Shabbos? That's an excellent question. But we're talking about rare or medium rare, or, you know, anything short of blue rare or whatever that thing is called, to medium, let's say. Okay, so the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos and Perek Tes says, well, he implies that you're actually chayiv in such a case. That if a person would take this half-cooked chicken and cook it all the way on Shabbos, that would be he'd be obligated for having done that. He'd be chayiv for having done that. He'd be in violation of bishul on Shabbos. Even though it was already edible, you've made it more edible. You made it more edible, and therefore you're chayiv. The Rashba, in his commentary on the Gemara, but the Magen Mishnah quotes it there in the Rambam, the Rashba argues and says that you'd be potter, you'd be exempt in such a case. That's not bishul once it's Michael Ben Josiah. Like you were saying, once it's already cooked to the edible level, then reheating it is just, Ein bishel acher bishel. It's a regular case of ein bishel acher bishel.
Personalized case also.
That is a whole other discussion. When exactly, right? So there is some objective standard, apparently. Objectively, half cooked or a third cooked, depending on who you pass, like is objectively edible. You're right, though. It changes with subjectivity. Yeah.
But the most discernible would say we're no right?
Absolutely. We do not. Yes.
Yes.
We are machmir on this. Yes, 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 yes. But here it's machlokas and nishonim. That's what we're trying to understand right now. Correct. What's the pshat in machlokas? What are they arguing about? So the Rav of Soloveitchik used to explain very, very beautifully like this. What they're arguing about is what the idea of ein bishel acher bishel really means, as follows. The Rashba told us that if a person would have half-cooked meat, which is technically edible, and then he cooks it the rest of the way, he'd be patur, he'd be exempt. Why? Because the Rashba understands, I guess, the way I was implying before, which is that what ein bishel acher bishel means is that you can only have one maisa bishel. You can only have one act of bishel of cooking on an object, on a piece of food. Is it cooked or is it not cooked? If I cook it to Michael Ben Jusai, to half-cooked, and we assume that's halachically cooked, then everything I do afterwards is nothing. It's meaningless halachically. I mean, you could see in Metzias, in reality, you see it getting darker, you see it changing. But halachically, was it cooked before? Yes. So halachically, am I cooking now? No. I haven't done anything. I haven't added anything because halachically it was already done. The rest of the subsequent acts of cooking simply do not register on the halachic scale. The Rambam, who said that, no, in such a case you'd still be chayiv. Why? Because you're adding, you're doing more, you're fixing the food, you're making it more edible. So he says there's a different idea in the first place of ein bishel acher bishel. It's not that once it's cooked, there's no more cooking. The Rambam says like this, ein bishel acher bishel means that once a food item is cooked, you're not adding anything to the food item by cooking it. And therefore, ein bishel acher bishel, because we know on Shabbos there's the concept of meleches machsheves, which means that on Shabbos, it's not true. We tend to say it this way, but we're really simplifying it. It's not true that on Shabbos it's usher to do, to work, to do acts of labor. That's also true, but that's not the definition of malacha on Shabbos. The definition of malacha on Shabbos means that a person cannot do productive labor on Shabbos, meaning they can't create things through malacha. Midrabanan, there are a whole lot of isurim that apply even when you're not creating something. But it's only isurim that are creative, meleches machsheves, that actually accomplish some goal that are prohibited on Shabbos. So carrying a couch around on your back outside, ironically, is not a melacha on Shabbos. It's aser, because of tircha. But it's not a melacha on Shabbos. Whereas flipping on an incandescent light bulb could be an iser daraisa. That's an iser daraisa on Shabbos. What do you mean? It didn't take so much labor. Yeah, but I produced something. I created a flame. I created a fire. So that's going to be something that's aser on Shabbos on a daraisa level. So melacha means meleches machsheves, something productive where you've created, you've enhanced the world, you've done something that's tangible in this world. Says the Rambam like this, bishul means that you cook something to the point where you're masakin, you fix up, you enhance the food. Once the food is fully cooked, it can no longer be enhanced. It can no longer be enhanced. So ein bishul acher bishul. That makes sense, right? What happens if you cook the food halfway? Yeah, you've done an enhancement to the food, that's bishul, but there's still a ways to go until it's fully cooked. So every subsequent act of bishul, says the Rambam, is also considered cooking on Shabbos, because in this unique case, you have bishul on the object that was already half cooked because you're still enhancing the food. That's the definition of bishul. Ein bishul acher bishul for the Rambam means that you cannot, once the thing is finished cooking, you can't add anymore. There's no melachas machsheves. But if the thing isn't finished cooking, every time you add a little bit more cooking, you're adding more to this food. You're enhancing it more and more. That's the malacha of bishul on Shabbos.
Intent also, like, oh, I don't have time to cook the whole thing, so I cook it halfway. I'm good.
In terms of what? In terms of
I'll finish it on Shabbos.
Well, yeah, you sort of have that. I mean, you sort of have that idea.
But if you intended that, isn't that a problem?
Again, we're talking. Let's say
where that's where I wanted it. Now I'm just repeating it.
Right. Oh, so I don't. So right. So I hear what you're saying. So I don't think that will make the difference. It is true that we cook it. We make sure it's cooked before Shabbos in order to avoid there are abundant issues of bishul on Shabbos. That is true. But I don't think the intent will matter. It'll be more objective in that way.
But a lot of halachas of cooking on Shabbos, mm-hmm. not cooking on Shabbos, have to do with the fact that you may come to change the flame.
That's all the derabbanans, all the rabbinic prohibitions. Right. Right. We're talking now on the plane of biblical. You're absolutely right. Once we get to the derabbanans, the rabbinic level. A lot of, like you said pretty accurately, a lot of the halachas are really just, don't do this, lest you come to stoke the coals, which will raise the flame, or in our modern day, to turn the knob, or whatever. That's why we cover the knob, that's why we cover the flame, you know, things like that. Correct. But on a derech level, we're talking about just in terms of mamish cooking, literal cooking on Shabbos.
I never understood, because it seems to me, if it's half cooked as were cooked halakhically, at a molecular level, you're still the part that's not cooked is cooking later.
Absolutely. So how could anyone not say like the Rambam? Right. How could anyone say you're spot? Yes. No. So the answer to your question is, halakha doesn't follow the molecular level of science. Halakha is its own independent rules of thought and science in and of itself in a certain way. Halakha relates to our reality, but doesn't respond to our reality. So nothing is bothersome about that. Halakha doesn't have to, the halakhos of cooking don't have to line up with the halakhos of with the science of cooking. There's no reason it has to.
I think it's ironic that you compare this meat to meat of was he a pirate or something? That's what I imagine.
Something like that.
But that's appropriate for Shabbos to begin with. Like, you should be preparing something that is.
Oh, but in terms of it being cooked halakhically, okay. Yeah, I guess in terms of Kavod Shabbos, it wouldn't be the biggest mitzvah. That's correct. But you still have to have a minimum in terms of halacha. But yeah, you should definitely do a better job than Ben Drusai did for Shabbos. Also, I should note that we shouldn't learn from the other half of what he did. That being a ganav is a bad thing, also. So once we're learning, let's definitely not be like him. So with all this in mind, here's my question: can you apply the halacha? This is very fascinating. I think we're equipped. If everyone understood until now, we're equipped to answer it ourselves. Can you apply the halacha of ein bishul achar bishul by Shabbos to basar b'chalav? On Shabbos, if something is cooked, you're allowed to reheat it on a deraisa level. Again, we're not talking about derabanan. On Shabbos, you're allowed to reheat. So can you also reheat, cook something again if it was already cooked when it was basar b'chalav? Should that also be allowed? Should the halacha of ein bishul achar bishul be taken from Hilchos Shabbos and be brought to basar b'chalav? What would you say about that? Give me a learning reason. Not an emotional answer.
It seems if you're learning a principle from one thing, you should be able to apply the principle outside of that.
Is there anything unique about Shabbos that shouldn't apply to Basar B'chalav? Okay, so let's say for the Rashba.
The cooking part.
What? Yeah, what's different? They're both usher. You're not allowed to cook on Shabbos, you're not allowed to cook Basar B'chalav. What's the difference?
Because the Shabbos recognized the first way of cooking.
Excellent. So let's spell that out a little bit, okay? So let's start with, we'll start with the Rashba, and then we'll come back to your point, because the Rashba was raised first. The Rashba says like this. The Rashba says that you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. What's usher on Shabbos? Cooking. A maisa bishul. Cooking. The act of cooking. And if you've done that maisa bishul before Shabbos, if you've already cooked something before Shabbos, any subsequent cooking is zero. It's disregarded. It's not relevant. It doesn't register on the halachic scale. So now let's go to Hilchos Basar B'chalav. You are not allowed to cook. If it's already cooked, it's not considered cooking to reheat it. That transfers just fine, right? Very smooth, very easy. But what you raise is an interesting point. The Rambam told us that the idea behind Ein Bishul Achar Bishul wasn't about a Maisa Bishul. It wasn't about the act of Bishul. What was it about? What was the term we used?
Improving.
And in Hebrew, Meleches Machsheves. Which means that Shabbos has a particular set of rules which govern its halachos. What's asar on Shabbos is not the act of cooking. It's a meleches machsheves of cooking. It's a productive, enhancing act of cooking. That's prohibited on Shabbos. Which is why, the Rambam tells us, if you only cook something, k'michel ben drusai, just half cooked before Shabbos, then on Shabbos you reheat it. That is considered bishul. Why? Because you're still enhancing, you're still adding, you're still fixing that food, so to speak, at this point on Shabbos. So, according to the Rambam, is it easy to transfer the halachos from Shabbos to Basar B'chalav? Not so easy anymore, right? By Shabbos, the reason why there's a halacha of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul is because at a certain point, you're no longer enhancing the food. But when it comes to a Maisa Bishul of Basar B'chalav, when there's no concept of Meleches Machsheves, maybe the second it's cooked, and there's nothing else to do. And there's no reason that you should transfer one to the other, Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, Yesh Bishul Achar Bishul. It's not clear that the halachos should be transferred one to the other. So that's a machlokas Rambam and Rashba, and that's a machlokas in terms of the idea of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. But what you see when you understand the machlokas in Hilchos Shabbos is you start to feel what the machlokas in Bishul Basar B'chalav is all about. In Basar B'chalav, we mentioned the Achronim. If you look, we don't have time to get into it, but really it's a machlokas Rishonim, maybe even a machlokas in the Amorayim, Levi and Rav, in Maseches Chul and Daf Kof Ches. But if you take a look there, you'll see it's a machlokas earlier on. But we saw machlokas in the more, later day, Achronim, as to whether there's a concept of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul when it comes to Basar B'chalav or only Shabbos. whether you can take from Shabbos and apply to Basar B'Challah really depends on how you understand it in Hilchos Shabbos, as we just laid out. So Rav Tzvi Bezalel Frank says that our question is really dependent on all of this. Testing that chocolate bar in the lab or the science experiment or whatever it might be should depend on the question of whether Yesh Bishal Achar Bishal by Basar B'Challah or Ein Bishal Achar Bishal by Basar B'Challah. But then Rav Tzvi Bezalel Frank continues, if you look in the third paragraph here, Ulam, he raises another point, which is very, very famous from the Dovev Misharim. That's what he quotes over here. Dovev Misharim was written by the Chabina Rav of Dov Barish Wiedenfeld, a contemporary posek and gadol in Eretz Yisrael. He escaped the war. I think he was in Siberia. He was in Siberia for a while. He definitely lost family in the war, and he made it to Eretz Yisrael and restarted, and he was a big gadol. He had a Rosh Hashiva and a posek, a chassidish also. So a very good biography about him, called Sar HaTorah, I believe. They have it in Hebrew. It's really a fantastic biography. And I think a few years ago they translated it into English. I think they still called it Sar HaTorah, just with S-A-R instead of Hebrew letters. Very, very fascinating biography. Worthwhile read. A very, very strong-willed, amazing person. Very impressive person. So anyways, in his Sefer Dovi Misharim, he was asked basically this exact question. I think it was about chocolate, I'm not sure. But he was asked the same exact question. This chemical lab that wants to test for Basar B'Challah, is that considered cooking on the item? Very interestingly, and Rav Avadya Yosef is very bothered by this, but very interestingly, the Chabina Rav in Dovi Misharim, he never raises the question of Bishal Achar Bishal. He leaves it out entirely. Such a fundamental, critical point over here. Why doesn't he mention it? So that's a question. But either way, he has an interesting ha'ara here, which Rav Tzvi Bezalel Frank quotes. We're not going to start with the Dov Misharim, only because I'm a YU guy, and we have nothing against Dov Misharim, don't worry. But this story happened in Yeshiva University. Not so long ago, Rav Shechter Shlita, my Rebbe, has the following story in the Sefer Mipnine HaRav. So Mipnine HaRav, he writes, that there's a firm student in the university, I referenced this earlier, who was working in the laboratory on his science experiments for the school. And one of the tasks that he was given was to cook something that was meat and dairy together in a dish or whatever, in a Bunsen burner. I don't know the terms. I'm sorry. What?
Flask.
Sure, a flask. Okay. So they were cooking in the flask and they were exploding things. And the things that were exploding were meat and milk. Wow. So he wanted to know. He asked Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Anyone know who Moshe Soloveitchik was? The Rav's father. The Rav's father, Rav Soloveitchik's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. So he asked Rav Moshe Soloveitchik if it's permissible for him to do those science experiments, or is that problematic? So Rav Moshe said that if you look in the Rambam, you'll see that it should be permissible. Why would it be permissible? So he quoted a Rambam like this. The Rambam Machalos Surahs Perek Tes says that we know that both Bishul, cooking, and Achila, eating, are both Aser Min HaTorah, Aser Daraisa, Aser biblically, they're prohibited biblically from the pasuk of Lo Sevash Agdi B'chalei Vima. So the Rambam says, why didn't the Torah say Lo Sochal Gidi V'chalei Vima? Right? Why didn't the Torah also spell out that it's Aser to eat? It only said Lo Sevashal, it only said don't cook. Why did it say it that way? So Rambam says an interesting thing. He says like this. Listen to this. He says, the Torah didn't have to mention Achila. It didn't have to mention eating. Once the Torah told us that Bishul is Aser, cooking is Aser, obviously Achila, eating, is Aser as well. If cooking is Aser, for sure eating is Aser. What's the svara? What's the logic? What does one have to do the other?
Because when you test it, you're not necessarily eating it.
Oh, that's jumping the gun. That's when we're going to get the answer. But what's the Rambam saying right here? The Rambam says, since the Torah already told us that cooking is Aser. If cooking is Aser, for sure eating is Aser. Why? What is cooking and eating? Those are two separate things.
Yeah, but particularly if you were had raw things, you know, if it didn't require cooking to eat it, and it was milk and meat, could you eat milk and meat together that wasn't cooked?
Not no. Midah rice, that wouldn't be an issue. No, midah rice, okay. It would not be an issue. So what does one have to do with the other? The fact that it says cooking, why does that teach you eating?
Well, why else do you cook?
Ah, excellent. What is the goal of cooking almost always? Yeah,
that's why it's right.
To make food, to eat, excellent. To prepare food to eat. Says the Rambam, if the Torah says, Lo sivashel di b'chalei vimo, don't cook food, don't cook meat and milk, what's the purpose of your cooking usually? To eat it. So if the Torah says don't cook it, obviously you can't eat it. That's what you're cooking for. So the Torah didn't have to go out of its way to tell you don't cook and don't eat. Once it told you don't cook, it also meant don't eat. The truth is, this jibes very nicely with what the Kesef Mishnah in his commentary in Hilchos Tumas Meis, how he gets into it, not for now, but the Kesef Mishnah says that there's a concept, he doesn't say in these terms necessarily, but there is a concept called Siag Daraisa, which means we're familiar that Midarabanan, Chazal often give us Gidarim, fences around mitzvos. They're charged with that. That's what the Gemara in Beitza says. Rashi in Beitza tells us that Chazal are told by Asu Mishmeres L'Mishmarti that they're told to create a fence around the Torah. Hashem gave us mitzvos, and the Rabbanan, the Rabbanan throughout the generations are told how to keep us away from violating those mitzvos. You're not allowed to drive off a cliff. You can't even be 10 feet away from the cliff now because Chazal say stay farther away. So there's such a concept on a Daraisa level as well, that there are Yisurim Daraisa that are protected by other Yisurim Daraisa. Fascinating concept. Yosef Engel is most famous for making this concept well known. But one of the cases which Rabbi Yosef Engel talks about is from this case of Mishnah, which he says is Bishel Basar Bechalav. The Torah prohibits cooking Basar Bechalav. Why? As a safeguard to avoid eating Basar Bechalav. Fascinating. There's an Isser Daraisa that's already the Torah is assuming, operating with, that you cannot eat Basar Bechalav, Basar Kuk Bechalav. And in order to safeguard us on a Daraisa level, not a Darabanan, biblically, to safeguard us from eating it, we are told not to cook it either, which sounds exactly like we were just saying in the Rambam as well, right? Another point, this is fascinating, I mentioned, I kind of referenced it very briefly earlier, Rabbi Menachem Ganak points this out in his Sefer Gan Shoshanim. He says that if you look in the Targum Unklus, the translation of Unklus on the Torah, in the Pasuk, Lo Sivashal Gedi B'Chalei Vimo, he does not say Lo Sivashal means don't cook. You know what he says? Lo Sivashal Gedi B'Chalei Vimo means Lo Seichlun. Do not eat Basar B'Chalei Vimo. Do not eat Basar B'Chalei. Meaning he translates the cooking as eating. Because like you said, cooking is really a process that's only leading to eating. So says Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and the Dovid Misharim said this as well, the one we referenced before that Rav Tzipi Hassel Frank quotes, that in a case of a chemical laboratory, the chocolate case, or the case in the college, in the university, whatever the case might be, when a person is just cooking for a science experiment, they're not eating it. There's no goal of eating it. They're not making something edible even. They're just cooking Basar Bechalav to inspect it. According to the Rambam, it's not leading to eating, then it's not the type of bishul the Torah asered in the first place. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that incredible? It's a different definition of cooking.
You don't call it cooking, you call it heating it.
You call it heating, right? It's not even right. You wouldn't even refer to it as cooking, even though we look at it as cooking because you're putting a fire to the stuff. It's heating. It's analyzing, but it's not actually the process of cooking for eating. That's not what the Torah meant. It's interesting. There's a sefer called Pischei Tshuvos, not Pischei Tshuva that you're familiar with. A sefer called Pischei Tshuvos, a more contemporary book that collects Pischei Halacha from later Achronim. So the Kor Veliashiv, such a funny case, but he said it. That if a person has a trash can, maybe you should have separate trash cans based on this. If a person has trash cans of meat and dairy mixed in together, and then the trash gets burnt, or they want to burn the trash. Let's say that you have a trash can that has meat and milk, and then you hated my shear, so you start burning trash in the parking lot in order to protest me coming back next 2 weeks. So fine, so you start burning trash cans, but you know I get the last laugh. You know why? You're all over on Bishel Basar Bechalav because you're cooking all the trash. So they quote Rabbi Yashiv as being machmer on that. I don't know, but other poskim. Exactly. So other posts can say, based on our Kesef mission, no, there's no intention to eat that. You're just trying to, get Steinmetz out of town. So that's why you're burning the trash. But that's not cooking Basar Bechalav.
Cubes of cheese and cubes of meat, deli meat.
Yeah.
That haven't been cooked. Theoretically, you could eat them.
That's what I just said.
No, only on a biblical level.
Okay.
Everything's Asar Midaravanan, for sure.
They have never been cooked, theoretically.
On a De'orais level, but they're absolutely forbidden Darabanan. Absolutely forbidden Darabanan. Yeah. So
that would be right.
You want
to say, don't eat it, even though you're
right, right, right,
that you only
right. But the Torah didn't say that. The Torah didn't say that. Yeah. So at the end of the day, Rav Tzipi Hassel Frank quotes all of this. He quotes all of this, but he has kashas, he has aharos on each stage. And at the very, very end, he points out that it's not even clear that the Rambam really meant this. If you look in the very last paragraph on the end of the second page, he says it's not even clear the Rambam meant this in the first place. The Rambam in Machlokes Sura's Perek Tes also says in the following case. He's Mekel, which comes out the wrong way, according to the Kesef Mishnah, what we quoted before. He says that the Rambam tells us that if someone, we're not going to get into the details here, if someone cooks chelev, fats, which are considered meat, but they're usher to eat in and of themselves, independently, they're usher to eat. So they're fats, meaty fats, fatty meats, and they cook them in chalev, milk, chelev and chalev. Half of learning Yerodea is trying to figure out when the postmen are saying chelev or chalev, because when you're reading, they don't have nekudos. So you finally find yeshiva guys like not knowing how to read Hebrew. It's amazing. So chelev or chalev, what are we talking about? The big nafkaminas. Are you cooking this meat in meat or are you cooking this meat in milk? I have no idea. So here, let's say you cook chelev in chalev. You cook fatty meats in milk. So that's going to be bishul, says the Rambam. You're going to get malkos for doing bishul daraisa, bishul on a biblical level, of the meat and milk together. Okay, what if you then eat it? So, not going to get into the reason why, but because of the concept of ein iser chal iser, because this meat was already usher, because it was chelev, the Rambam thinks that if you eat it now, you won't be over and get the malchus on a derais level for eating basar b'chalav. Now, forget about the reasoning, but here what do we have a case of? He says, you are forbidden on a biblical level to cook it, but you are not forbidden on a biblical level to eat it. What does that sound like? Those are two separate yisurim. It's not that the cooking is only for the eating. Cooking is independently usher, and eating is independently usher. So if Tzvi Pesach Frank says, the whole argument falls by the wayside. Even the Rambam doesn't really think they're inextricably linked. He thinks they're extricably linked. I don't think that's a term. But that would be cool, right? That would be the way to say it, I feel like. They're linked, but they're extricable.
But then back to the experiment, then
it's
a question.
Oh, so then Tzvi Pesach Frank comes out, l'chumra. Whereas all the other posts we mentioned, Tilan, Dov Mishar, Mesh Soloveitchik, all of the Rishonim we said sounded like that, all of the Riachonim that sounded like it, the Kasef Mishnah, sound like you could say, once it's an experiment, once it's just science, you're allowed to be Makel. Or Tzvi Pesach Frank says, no, not so fast. Maybe we have to be stringent. Because even though we said in one place the Rambam sounds like the two are linked, and only if you're cooking for eating is usher, but if you're cooking just for an experiment, it's not forbidden. But here we see the Rambam doesn't mean that, and maybe even cooking just for an experiment is already prohibited, is already not allowed, even on a Deraisa level. Now, that is how Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank comes out here. It's just interesting to note, Rav Adi Yosef has a nice tshuva about this in Yabia Omer Yordea Chilek Zayin. There he says, he quotes all of this. He quotes everything we're talking about, as usual, Kedarka Bakodesh. But he thinks at the end of the day, there's one big happy family of sfeikos here. And the way, if anyone here is familiar with the Rav Adi Yosef's psukim, everything's just a sfeik sfeiko. Once he gets enough machloksos, once he gets enough arguments, he says, look, there's an argument about this, 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 and this. So somewhere along the way, you're allowed to be Mekel, and we're probably allowed to be Mekel on the Shaila. So here he says there's at least four Sveikos. First of all, there might not be any Basar B'chalav in the chocolate bar. That's what he's inspecting. Maybe there isn't any Basar B'chalav. Okay, it's a Psik Resha, it's a Suffolk Psik Resha, Psik Resha La'asha Avar, Lissa Asid. Okay, it's a discussion, but there might not be Basar B'chalav in the chocolate bar. Even if there is, maybe we hold Ein Bishal Achar Bishal. It's already been cooked, and you're just reheating it. Okay, even if you think Yesh Bishal Achar Bishal, even if you assume that, maybe this is not considered a Bishal. Maybe melting is not called cooking. We didn't get into this, but maybe that's called frying or something different, and that's not really called cooking. And that's a question whether frying is considered on a deraisa level called bishul bas b'chalav. And lastly,
in the microwave, is that considered cooking?
That would be another shear for sure. Maybe the whole thing is permissible in the first place because it's done for a science, not for achila, like we said from the Kesef of Mishnah. So the Rav Adi says, I can't tell you definitively that any of those answers are the answer, but I have four possibilities to be lenient over here, and one of them should be right. Or at least half of them should be right. Something should be right over here, and therefore Rav Adi Yosef is willing to be Mekel. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank wasn't willing to be Mekel, but the Dov Meshar and Rav Meshach Soloveitchik, they were willing to be Mekel based on that Kesef Mishnah in the Rambam. And Rav Adi Yosef is willing to be Mekel based on four tzadim, four reasons altogether. If you put it all together, it's a sfeik, 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 sfeika. And you can be Mekel on such a thing. So based on that, he is lenient. Okay, so we saw a whole tshuva from Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. It was our first tshuva in Yaradeya. So Shkayach to us on doing that. We learned a little bit of Basar B'chalav, some of the Deraisa concepts. Halacha l'maisi, you still have to ask all these shailas because everything gets us or me the rabbanan. But at least we're starting to understand the concept of cooking, the concept of cooking on Shabbos, the concept of cooking when it comes to Basar B'chalav. And B'siyat HaShemayah will continue in 2 weeks with some other tshuva, who knows what. Maybe Pesach related B'siyat HaShemayah, Bli Nadir. Everyone has to have a wonderful day.